Whoa, thank you. Thank you. The first time we did this, if you recall, you had a set for a play, and we were all squinched in the corner back there. Do you remember that? Good morning. Something I have to do first, because my heart is so full that my beloved husband is here with us this morning. My partner and my friend and my co-seminarian, Reverend Hal Milton, I just want him to stand, because I want you to just behold the beauty I get to see all the time. So turn around. Those of you fortunate enough to have life partners know that what it is you do in your world and in your life and in your creative expression is so dependent on the support of your partner, and I'm so thrilled to have had 33 years of this support. So, also here is our fabulous grandson, Stuart, but he probably wouldn't want to stand up, unless he does. All right. And this is Stuart's first trip to New York City. He lives in Santa Cruz. He's a surfer guy. And he's really excited to be here and all the cool stuff that we're going to be doing during the week. So I needed and wanted to say that. What I also needed and wanted to say is what's so real is what gives life to Unity of New York. Wouldn't you say? There's so much life here. And what we are going to be doing over the next couple of months is really identifying, each one of you have the opportunity to do that individually, what is it that gives life to you? What's the great stuff that's here? Because we find when we focus on that, instead of, well, what works and what doesn't work, and what are three things, the energy is different. So it doesn't mean we're in denial. It means we celebrate what's good. And yesterday, a group of incredible people, I'd like to ask those of you who were together yesterday to stand, so you just kind of have a look at, yes, okay. These people and others will be your interviewers, and you'll hear more about that in the coming weeks, but we have set up some times for you to be interviewed and have a sacred conversation. A sacred conversation, which means you go right to the truth, right to the heart. You look and see and tell the truth. And so I'm really excited about that. I won't be here during the process, but it will be handled well by all the amazing people here that handle things well, because you have that. So just know that's coming up. You'll have an opportunity to sign up, or if you're a member, one of the perks of being a member of Unity New York is you'll be contacted by someone to schedule an interview. So that'll be wonderful. I'll come back in September. We'll have another grand event, a Sacreds Conversation Summit, where we'll look at everything that's come up and work on defining more specifically the great future, the bright future for Unity of New York. What are the core values? What's the vision? Vision is what you want to become, and mission is how you do that, and the values are those underpinnings. So you'll be hearing more about that later. But for now, I want to tell you a couple of stories that, even if you've never heard them before, you already know. And if they are familiar, you'll discover that you know more about them than you think. And those of you who were familiar with the Eye of the Storm and read the book, this first story might be familiar to you. But no matter how many times you hear these stories, even if these stories didn't actually happen, they're true. You find that? So the train clanked and rattled through the suburbs of Tokyo on a drowsy spring morning. And at one station, the doors opened, and suddenly the afternoon quiet was shattered by a man bellowing violent, incomprehensible curses. The man staggered into our car. He wore laborer's clothing. He was big, he was drunk, and he was dirty. Screaming, he swung at a woman holding a baby, and the blow sent her spinning into the laps of an elderly couple. It was amazing that the child, was unharmed. Terrified, the couple got up and scrambled to the other end of the car, and the laborer aimed a kick at the retreating back of the old woman, but fortunately, she was able to scuttle to safety. It so enraged this man that he grabbed the pole in the center of the car and tried to wrench it out of place, and I could see one of his hands was cut and bleeding. The train lurched ahead, the passengers frozen with fear. I stood up. I was young then, some 20 years ago, and I was in pretty good shape. I'd been putting in a solid 8 hours of Aikido training nearly every day for the past 3 years. I liked to throw and grapple. I thought I was tough. But the trouble was, my martial skill was untested in actual combat because as students of Aikido, we're not allowed to fight. Aikido, my teacher had said again and again, is the art of reconciliation. Whoever has the mind to fight has broken his connection with the universe. If you try to dominate people, he would say, you're already defeated. We study how to resolve conflict, not how to start it. I listened to his words. I tried hard. I even used to cross the street to avoid the pinball thugs who hung out at the train stations. I felt both tough and holy. In my heart, though, I wanted an absolute legitimate opportunity where I could save the innocent by destroying the guilty. This is it, I said to myself. People are in danger, and if I don't do something fast, if I don't save the day, somebody will probably get hurt. Seeing me stand up, the drunk recognized a chance to focus his rage. Aha, he roared, a foreigner. You need a lesson in Japanese manners. I held on tightly to the commuter strap overhead and gave him a slow look of disgust and dismissal. I was going to take this turkey apart, but he had to make the first move. I wanted him mad, so I pursed my lips and sent him an insolent kiss. All right, he hollered, I'm going to teach you a lesson. And he gathered himself for a rush at me, and a fraction of a second before he made his move, someone shouted, hey! And it was ear-splitting. I remember the suddenly joyous, lilting quality of that, as though you and a friend have been searching diligently for something and you've found it, and he'd suddenly stumbled upon it. Hey! I wheeled to my left, the drunk wheeled to his right, and we both stared down at a little old Japanese man. He must have been well into his 80s, this tiny man immaculate in his kimono. He took no notice of me, but he beamed just delightedly at the laborer as if he had a most welcome, an important secret to share. Come here, he said in this easy vernacular, beckoning to the girl. Come here, talk to me. He waved his hand lightly, and the big man followed as if on a string. He planted his feet belligerently in front of the gentleman and roared. He said, why the hell should I talk to you? The drunk now had his back to me, and if his elbow moved so much as a millimeter, I'd drop him in his socks. The old man continued to beam at the laborer. What you been drinking, he said, his eyes sparkling with interest. I've been drinking sake, said the laborer, and it's none of your business, and bits of spittle flew from his mouth. That's wonderful, said the old man. Absolutely wonderful. You see, I love sake, too, and me and my wife, she's 82, you know. Every evening, we go out and sit on the patio, and we drink sake. We warm it up. We sit on this old wooden bench, and we watch the sun go down, and we look at the old persimmon tree. You know, my great-grandfather planted this tree, and we wonder if it'll recover from the frost and the cold we have this winter. But the tree's done better, even though it's poor soil, and we love to watch the tree while we're drinking our sake and enjoy the evening, even when it rains. And he looked up at the laborer, his eyes twinkling in his kimono. As he struggled to follow the old man's conversation, the drunk's face began to soften. His fists slowly unclenched. Yeah, he said, I love persimmons too, and his voice trailed off. Yes, said the old man, smiling, and I'm sure you have a wonderful wife. No, replied the laborer, my wife died. And very gently, swaying with the motion of the train, he began to sob. I don't got no wife. I don't got no home. I don't got no job. I am so ashamed of myself. And tears ran down his face. Spasm of despair rolled through his body. Now it was my turn, standing there in my well-scrubbed youthful innocence, this make the world safe for democracy righteousness I had. I suddenly felt dirtier than he was. The train arrived at my stop, and as the doors opened, I heard the young man, the old man, cluck sympathetically. "My, my," he said, "that's such a difficult predicament. Sit down here. Tell me more." I turned my head for one last look, and the old man was cradling the laborer's head in his lap as the laborer laid across the seat. He was stroking softly the filthy, matted hair. The train pulled away. I sat down on a bench, and what I'd wanted to do with muscle had been accomplished with kind words, tenderly, truthfully. I had just seen Aikido tried in combat, and the very essence of it was love. Love wastefully. I love that. You may recall this story from the Iliad, that epic poem by Homer, which tells us about the Trojan War. Or at least you remember the film with Brad Pitt, where he played Achilles. You remember that one, Troy? Maybe you remember that. Anyway, in one incident, Achilles, the famous warrior of Greece, this part wasn't in the film, but he takes his troops out of the war, and the entire war effort suffers. And in the course of the ensuing muddle, his friend, his favorite cousin, his heart brother is killed in battle. He's killed in a single combat by Hector, one of the Trojan princes. His name was Patroclus. And now Hector is wearing the armor of Patroclus because that was his war goodie that he collected. And Achilles, who knew exactly every inch of that armor with a very definitive thrust of his sword, thrust it into the neck of Hector and killed him. But before he died, Hector pleaded with Achilles to return his soon-to-be-dead body to his family, to the Trojans. Because according to the lore of the time, he would be wandering forever, never settled into eternity. But Achilles was mad with grief, and he resolved that the body would go and be ravaged by dogs and scavenger birds. So again, he would be lost and wandering eternally. Now one night, Priam, who was the father of Hector and the old king of Troy, who was just beside himself with grief, he went into the camp of the Greeks incognito. And so he wanted to ask for the body of his son. And so everybody was really surprised when he lifted off the hood of his cloak and revealed himself to be who he was. And Achilles looks at him and thinks of his own father. And he begins to cry, to weep. And the sound of the weeping first fills the tent of Achilles and soon fills the entire camp, this loud, grieving weeping. And the Greeks believe that weeping together creates a sacred bond, a sacred conversation. So then Achilles takes the body of Hector and oh so tenderly and lovingly hands it to Priam. And the two look at each other and see each other as the divine. Our first principle in unity is that there is one power and one presence. Those five principles are in your bulletin, and we affirm that together. And our second principle is that that same power and presence, that same divinity that is inherent, is individuated in each one of us. So it's not even like there's a spark of divine in you. It's that you are the divine. I am the divine. And when we can see that, when we can behold that in each other, oh my gosh, is that delicious? That's what we did yesterday when we worked together as interviewers, and that's the experience you will have in your sacred conversation. It's the experience you have, I know, when you listen to the music here and the lessons here, when you're in classes. And then the hope is always that we take that out into our world. And sometimes it's a little challenging with our fathers and with our mothers, would you say? For some of us, our fathers were our lifetime heroes, the wind beneath our wings, and fortunate are those of us that have those kinds of memories. But for others, some of the experiences are less savory, especially those of us who've lived a longer time and have those mixed feelings that come to us as we grow and learn and find out who we are. Any of you remember the film Smoke Signals? Anybody see that? That was a very profound, quirky, funny movie. I think it was around 1998, 99. And it was really the story of two young Native American men who go out to find themselves and to have all their problems solved. And at the end of the movie is an excerpt from an incredible poem by Dick Laurie, and I want to just share that with you. It goes like this. How do we forgive our fathers? Maybe in a dream. Do we forgive our fathers for leaving us too soon or forever when we were little? Maybe for scaring us with unexpected rage or making us nervous because there never seemed to be any rage at all. Do we forgive our fathers for marrying or not marrying our mothers or for divorcing or not divorcing our mothers? And shall we forgive them for pushing or leaning or shutting doors, for speaking through walls or never speaking or never being silent? Do we forgive our fathers in our age or in theirs or in their deaths? Saying it to them, not saying, if we forgive our fathers, what is left? What is left when we forgive? See, that is one of our incredible practices, isn't it? Is that level of forgiveness, which is really accepting. It's this idea. See, the compassion is at the root of our teachings, being in the eye of the storm. Course of Miracles says it so beautifully, exempt no one from our love, or you will be hiding a dark place in our minds where the Holy Spirit is not welcome. And so I want to suggest something called right seeing. Seeing people in the green. Each one of us is just full of potential, is full of divinity. And you know when you're not feeling it or somebody else's energy is coming at you, it's not about you. It's about them. Because you know who you are. You practice who you are. Remember those cards we wrote when we did the Eye of the Storm workshop? This is who I've come here to be. Words like authentic and divine and beautiful and intelligent and expressive. Those are the truth. Those words are the truth. The Gospel of Thomas, which I love, some of you might know, it's kind of like a streamlined gospel because it just has the sayings, not the story. When you produce this within, and he was always talking about the kingdom of God, the kingdom of heaven. When you produce this within, what you have will save you. What you do not have within, and this is pretty stark here, what you do not have within will kill you. And that's not literally killing you, but think of the suffering that you've had at different times in your life. And I would like to assume that some of us have suffered, you know. What do we say that pain, you know, pain is what you get, but suffering is, you know, a choice. I don't know. That's a little too glib for me. Who do you hold in consciousness that there's still some of that clenching about? And can you be and are you willing to let it go? Fathers, oh my Lord, imagine what that's like to know that you are responsible in the material world for a young being. Oh my gosh, I can't even imagine it. I think about some level of responsibility for people in their spiritual development, because I've, for some reason, took that on, and that's not mine either, but it's in my job description sometimes. Loving compassion. I know you love your fathers. Some of you don't even know who your fathers were. Isn't that wonderful? You can love all the fathers. Let your loving reflect the loving, compassionate heart you express. Remember that the martial art's not about the fighting. It's about noticing where your connection to your divinity might be broken, might be frayed, and let that come together. Because you have a community that supports that. You have a community that is your underpinning. You don't have to do this alone. That's easy to forget, but you don't. All is truly well in heaven and on earth. We truly are all one. I know that. You know that. This is what your father would have wanted for you all along. Nothing less for you to know that. It is truly good. Shalom and namaste. So very, very blessed. And so it's my joy in this moment to actually have the experience of the blessing. And I invite you to join me in consciousness and to allow the words of my own heart to be the words of your own heart. And so continue to breathe easily as Brit so lovingly invited us to do. To sink down into body. No one's looking. No one even cares. It's your time. It's my time. It's your time to be with yourself. And the beauty and the elegance of your own mind. Of your own being, of your own incredible life path that you've chosen. That's crazy, isn't it? But you chose it. And you've chosen to be here this morning to lighten the load, to let that which might be heavy on your heart, whether it has to do with a relationship, with a father, a mother, a lover, a friend, to just let it soften. Because we know that what works is not to deny these things, but to just let them be, to be oh so spacious that there's room for everything in your heart, in your mind, in your body experience. Oh, wow. So good. So join me in a great big inhalation. Make noise as you let it go. Yeah. Oh, and shake it out a little more. And let's do that two more times. Filling. Because we know that we could go off on some nice little mind journey now with flowers and birds and that kind of pretty stuff. And that's useful and important. But right now we're about being present, being mindful. And being mindful means being the witness. And so there's no good and there's no bad. There just is. And so in a few moments, I'll invite you to join me in the silence. And in this silence, we are together. We're not talking or singing or even looking at each other, but we're together.
And as those thoughts want to come in, or the planning about later, or what's for lunch, or who am I having brunch with, or what have I got to do first thing in the morning? Oh, as those thoughts want to come in, because that's what they do, we just gently say, not now, thank you, and right out the door. And another breath. So please join me in this practice of being mindful in the silence, in the silence, in the silence. And so as we begin to allow our awareness to come into this here and now, we give thanks. Sweet Spirit, Father God, Mother God, harmonizing energy of the universe that sources all, divine mind, spirit, whatever it is we call this incredible sense of awe, because truly we know that all things work together for good. We are so very blessed.